Lisa Davis, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. I'm dying. These are words that most of us dread hearing from the people we love. However, death is an inescapable part of life, and if it hasn't happened already, chances are you will be called upon to help a parent, spouse, friend, or other loved one through the valley. Yes, it can be a terrifying prospect, but according to today's guest, Donna Authors, it's also a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to help your loved one make the most of his or her final years, months, and days. Donna Authors is the author of the lovely and important book, A Sacred Walk, Dispelling the Fear of Death and Caring for the Dying. Donna lived in fear of death from childhood well into adult life as a result of the unusual number of tragic losses in her family. You will be captivated by the miraculous account of how her fear of death was broken by her grandmother's faith. It marked the start of her calling as a caregiver to others as they or their loved ones prepared to leave the world. The lessons of life highlighted throughout A Sacred Walk capture the wisdom of Donna's special friends and appeated just may help you live and die with no regrets. Donna, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Thank you, Lisa. It's lovely to be with you.
Yes, Donna, you know, I loved your book, and I wish that I'd had your book when my mother was dying, and she had died 15 years ago of ovarian cancer. And, you know, I mentioned in the introduction your fear of death, and you write in A Sacred Walk, quote, "My early experiences of sudden, untimely deaths in our family formed the basis of my near paralyzing fear of death." Donna, can you share with us the losses you experienced growing up and how they affected you?
Oh, well, yes, I can. And it actually started when I was very, very young. And I think the first death I experienced didn't really have as much of an impact on me when it happened as it did as I grew up, because it was the death of my father. I was only 2 years old when he was killed in World War II. Mm. And that situation just changed our life forever. And Mom remarried shortly thereafter so her little daughter could have a new daddy. And unfortunately, my baby sister Lorraine died of spinal meningitis on my fifth birthday.
Oh,
can you imagine?
No,
as a little child,
so
I woke up to the screams and cries, not the happy sounds that I was anticipating. That's one of my earliest childhood memories. And our family experienced so many sudden deaths, none of them normal, none of them, you know, like due to sickness until very later in my life. We had accidents. We had you know, suicides. It was just a very. I was beginning to think our family was cursed.
I'm sure. I don't blame you.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I'm very familiar with the sudden, untimely deaths and the reaction that people have when that happens. And I have such empathy for those terrible shocks that people have. I think I prefer, you know, from a, if I'm the person having to stay on, the long goodbye, as I call it, where
yes.
you have a chance to, you know, come to closure, to talk, to you know, say your goodbyes, and to prepare yourself. And certainly you know, the first time I experienced that was with my grandmother. And she's the one who helped dispel my fear of death because of her faith. It's a charming story that I tell in a chapter in the book called Grandma's Final Gift.
Oh, that's so lovely. And I love that you describe your grandmother as a living library.
Mm.
And you talk about that term in general for other folks, if you can talk about that.
Oh, that is one of my favorite terms. I heard one time a while ago that when an old person dies, another library burns down.
Mm.
And I thought, isn't that a great way to describe our aging population? And I've joined that population, by the way. And it's you know, the wisdom part is wisdom born of experience. And if we're wise, we can capitalize on each other's experiences and not have to, you know, go through the pain and suffering as when we're young if we listen and learn from the people who've been there before us. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book. I've learned so much as a caregiver from the people that I cared for about life. See, you know, the book, as I've been told from some of my readers, is not about death and dying only. It's about life. If you want to know how to live, just ask somebody who's facing a life-threatening illness. They tend to put everything in perspective. They tell you the should have, would have, could have, They'll talk about their regrets. And again, if we're wise, we can learn from them and live a much fuller life. And living life abundantly is what it's all about.
Yeah, it's true. You know, and you also talk about people who wanted to sort of help others not make the mistakes they made. There's a woman that was a smoker. And didn't she ask you to wheel her outside with a sign because she was dying of lung cancer to show other people?
Yes, her name was Sally, and her family couldn't be with her because of their jobs, and they asked me to visit with her on a regular basis. And I remember spending time with her for weeks, and a couple of days before she died, she, as you said, had lung cancer, and she opened her eyes and asked me if I would do her a favor and put her in a wheelchair and wheel her outside so everybody could see her and hang a sign around her neck. Now, mind you, she's telling me this with gasps because she could hardly breathe any longer. And I said, Sally, what should the sign say? And she just said three words, do not smoke. And please tell the young people, she said, this is my fault. I chose to smoke. I knew what I was doing. I just didn't heed the warnings. And these are the consequences that I'm suffering from my choice to smoke. And that's what life is all about, choices, isn't it?
Yes.
Hope to make good choices in life. And Sally wanted me to, you know, just share the lesson that she learned. And that's one of the reasons why I included her story in the book, because she wanted to, I mean, it's like her life still has value and meaning. She's still teaching others because her final wishes and her final lesson was captured in this book now.
Yes, yes. You know, another thing that I thought was really wonderful about the book is you talk a lot about God and your feelings about God, and if you can expand on that and when you first started getting more, I mean, I don't know, would you call yourself religious or spiritual, or how would you define that or describe yourself?
Well, I don't like to think of myself as a religious person because, religion has created a lot of problems in this world.
Sure.
You know, but I do believe in God, and my faith is based on Christ. I have to say that. But mm-hmm. I know there are people have to come to terms with their view of God in their own way and in their own time. So I just lay out what I feel, but give the reader a choice to come to understand God in their own way. And for me, I believe in life eternal. When my grandmother was dying, she called to talk to me and wanted to spend time talking about death and dying. She's the one who just, because of her very strong faith, said, dying is part of life. You can't live in fear of death. You have to just live with the knowledge that we will be together one day for eternity. I mean, she believed that with all her heart and soul. And she said, you too will be where I am someday. There was such an assurance and a peace and a calm that she had, even though she was facing death herself. And that really got me thinking. And, of course, you know, life is a journey and a spiritual journey at that. And it just grew from there. But I guess the basis of my not fearing death the way I did before is because I choose to believe that there's something more.
Do you think somebody can still not fear death even if they don't believe there's something more? They might think, well, I live my life and this is what happened and now I'm just, that's it. I mean, I don't know how to describe it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's probably true. They can. But I do know from my personal experience, people who had faith in something more tended to have an easier time as they neared the end of their life. They tended to have greater peace. Mm-hmm. They were able to, you know, give their family this feeling of comfort and peace. It wasn't as terrible as somebody who was afraid to die and who feared what was next.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know, actually, my mother used to say that she envied her friends who were believers, and she wished that she was, and she would try to tell herself, but she didn't really feel it. So she said, oh, they are having an easier time. But she came to accept to the end. It took a long time, and that actually brings me into hospice. She was so determined that she was going to beat her ovarian cancer, even though all the signs were that she wasn't, that she just was like, I'm not getting hospice because I'm going to make it. And then finally she said, okay, I'm not. And she had it for a month, and she said, boy, I wish I had it earlier. It was so amazing. And if you can talk to us a little bit about your feelings about hospice.
Oh, I have some just very good feelings about hospice.
Yes.
One of the chapters in my book is entitled Hospice is for the Living.
Living, yeah.
Yeah, and hospice workers, volunteers, you know, anybody associated with hospice, you know, love the book and love sharing the book because I'm told that it's the first book that really gives a face and a voice to hospice. That chapter describes all the services that they provide in general. And part three of the book really makes it come alive because I detail the story of my mother's death. And as a matter of fact, you know from reading the book, she also died of ovarian cancer.
Yes, I was going to say.
Yeah. And but she had hospice, you know, for about 7 months.
Oh,
it was that as soon as the doctor said, there's nothing more we can do for you, we went to hospice. Of course, I knew about it from my years of caregiving, and I was exposed to it through all of the other people and special friends that I had over the years, and they taught me so much, and I went right to the hospice, and they came to Mom, and the doctor even said, well, your mother's not ready for hospice yet. Well, that's the misconception that even physicians have of hospice.
Oh.
They think it's some place that you go or you or people that you call in the last week of life. And, in fact, hospice tells me that the average stay of a person in hospice is only about a week. And that makes them very sad because there's so much more that they can do, not only for the patient but for their family. They have social workers, they have volunteers who can become friends, good listening friends to the patient, chaplains. There's so much to offer to help people improve the quality of their life during the time they have left. Nobody knows how many days you have except God, in my belief. MD does not stand for medical deity. And I really love the fact that hospice will really let the patient take the lead and, you know, be in charge of their care and, you know, help them really enjoy the final days.
Yes, that's so important. And there's other ways, too, that a loved one can help. And you have this wonderful article on your site, What Can I Do to Help? Nine From the Heart Answers Your Dying Loved One Would Like to Give You. And the suggestions come from men and women who have passed various milestones on their own sacred walk. And one of them is, don't ask me how to help.
Right.
If you can explain that.
Well, you know, the first thing we do when we hear that a friend has been diagnosed with a life-threatening illness is say, you know, what can I do? And when you pose that question to a person at that stage, they don't know what to answer. They don't know what to tell you. They are in the middle of a crisis right now. And so I suggest that you don't tell them what to do or ask them what to do because it puts another burden on them. They don't even know what they're going to do next. My suggestion, based on what people have told me over the years, is just do what you think comes naturally. If it's cooking a meal, if it's offering to drive them to the doctor, lots of things. One story that I really loved was about Barbara, who had lymphoma and had full body radiation and was very, very weak and living with a husband and two little boys. And one day there was a knock at the door. And when she took all the energy that she had to open the door, there was a woman standing there with a bucket and mop and cleaning supplies. And Barbara said, what are you doing? And she said, I'm here to clean your toilets. Barbara said, I was so embarrassed, but it was the greatest gift that anybody had given me. She said, I would never have asked anybody to come in and clean my house, let alone clean my toilets. But, you know, since that time, thankfully, Barbara has survived, and she has become the most caring and giving person and just shows up and does whatever she thinks is necessary based on her experiences.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Isn't that a great story?
That is a great story, Donna. You know, another one on the list is Don't Make Me Talk About My Condition.
Mm.
I thought it was interesting because I would have thought that they would want to be asked about it. But what's nice is the one after that is Listen to Me. So it's sort of like when they're ready to talk about it, then they'll talk about it.
That's exactly right.
Like, let them lead the conversation, right?
There you go. You got it. Because if, you know, you confront a person, now, and I'll give you an example from my own experience. I don't know if you recall, but before the book was published, I was in the final editing process. I was diagnosed with breast cancer myself.
Mm.
And I had to put the book aside. And thankfully, I had a lot of tutoring over the years by caring for other people. And I was able to apply and validate some of the messages that they gave me. And one of them is, you know, don't ask me to talk about my condition. And let me explain. If I would go to the grocery store or go to church or take a walk down the street and bump into somebody that I knew, the first thing they would say is, how are you? Now, that's a normal greeting, isn't it?
Yes.
We say, fine, how are you? But when they know that you're diagnosed with a life-threatening illness, they say, no, how are you really? And it's as if they're asking you to talk about your medical condition. Tell them all the details because they want to know. And it's, I think it's because there's a reflected fear that they have. But if they aren't ready to talk about it, asking them how they are really kind of puts their disease or the condition in the front of their face all the time. You know, they talk about their medical condition with their doctors, their family, their caregivers, and maybe all they wanted to do this day is take a walk, you know, or just have a social life out. Now, you're right. If somebody wants to talk, be prepared to listen, and that is the best thing to do. We just talked about the don'ts, I think the two major do-nots in caregiving, but the biggest do is to listen.
Mm-hmm.
Be prepared to be fully present with them and listen and not tell your story.
Yes.
You know,
it's interesting because I would have thought that you're being more, you know, empathetic if you say, no, how are you really? Like, I love you. I really want to know what's happening. So that's good. I need to learn this because that's my instinct is to say, like, you don't have to put up a front with me and say, oh, I'm fine. I want to know really because I love you what's going on.
That's right. But some people might say, oh, thank you for this is what they're saying in the back of their head. Thank you for reminding me that I have cancer.
I didn't know.
I kind of forgot about it today, you know.
Yes.
Taking a walk.
Now, that's the best advice, really. Yes. I'm sure people are going to be listening and saying, oh, my goodness, I never thought of it that way.
Right. Now, I think you should always say, how are you? And if they say, fine, how are you, accept it. Don't press the issue. And if they want to talk, be prepared to listen.
Yes. Now, you have a lot of other ones that you can find on your website. If you can give us your website, Donna, for these.
Well, it's the title of the book. It's asacredwalk.com. And I named the book A Sacred Walk because that's what I believe it is. Caring for someone or just walking through life can be a very sacred time. And it's very privileged position anybody will have, whether you're a family or a member or a friend, to care for someone, to walk with somebody through a very scary time in their life. Asacredwalk.com.
Oh, well, Donna, this has been so wonderful, and there's so much more to talk about, so I'd love to have you back on sometime, and I encourage everyone to get A Sacred Walk, Dispelling the Fear of Death and Caring for the Dying. It's really such an important topic and such a beautiful, lovely, I love your book. I'm like tripping over myself. That's a beautifully written and lovely book. So, Donna, thank you so much. And if people want to reach me, they can go to itsyourhealthradio.org. I hope everyone has a great week. Take care. Bye-bye.